Welcome to Bellwether Friends. Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us because we're librarians. Mostly. I'm Anna. And I don't like seafood.
I'm Aline and I love to snorkel.
Every couple of weeks, we're going to get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think, and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 94, Sharks, Sharks, Sharks. And we have two guests with us today.
And joining us today, we have Renata and Becca of The Worst Bestsellers. You may not know that Rebecca is secretly of The Worst Bestsellers, but
She's been on it.
With the corporation. I don't like to assume that anyone listening to any episode has ever even heard of podcasts.
Right.
So I just want to give them as much background as possible.
A lot of work goes on behind the scenes.
It really does.
Every hour that you hear, there's like 6 hours of me tearing my hair out.
Word.
Give or take. So, Becca and Anna will be spending a lot of time talking about podcast editing between the lines of Sharks, Sharks, Sharks.
But first, hold on. All of my hard work.
Oh, John Williams. How we love you so.
I'm scared.
Do you feel a sense of impending doom?
I mean, even more than usual.
So,
Renata loves the ocean and everything that lives in it.
She did mention that she hates the ocean and she doesn't understand why anyone would have anything to do with it. And we wondered why she wanted to go see the Meg with us.
It's a solid question. I do have a complicated relationship with sharks and the creatures of the sea, which is that I fear and distrust all the creatures of the sea, but sharks I perhaps respect and appreciate more than, for example, the octopus. I think they're much more aesthetically pleasing to look at. They definitely still do want to kill you the way an octopus will, but it just seems like I would rather be chomped than, like, to have a tentacle touch me, that, I don't even want, like, talk about that.
Okay, wait.
Will an octopus want to kill you?
Yes, they do.
I would absolutely believe an octopus would kill you before a shark would.
Okay,
a shark just wants pets.
Okay. Renata, what did the ocean do to you? And when?
Honestly, I haven't really had personal issue. Well, no, I did get stung by a jellyfish once, and that was rough. It's more just look at an octopus and tell me you feel okay about it.
Haven't you seen the adorable baby octopus that, like, goes and gets in the thing? I'm going to be sending you octopus videos.
I don't know if she's going to like that.
Sorry. Okay. Maybe I won't send you octopus videos, but I might put an octopus gif in the show notes.
So I'm going to go first on my shark movie experience.
No, wait. We're still talking about the ocean.
It's going to be short. Just telling you.
Right, yes, I know it's going to be short. But Becca, you seem sympathetic to Renata's reservations about the ocean. Is this also a thing for you?
I mean, I'm indifferent to the ocean. I don't care. I mean, I don't care for boats and I don't go to the beach, but the ocean in general, I'm like fine with it being there and it having its secrets.
Oh, listen, I'm not saying we should get rid of the ocean. I do want to
Where else would we put
that?
Our plastic garbage?
Put our garbage there. Yeah. I mean, if we didn't have the ocean, then would all the sharks and things come on land? Like, I definitely don't want that. No. The ocean is fine where it is. I just don't want to go in it. I don't want those creatures to look at me or know about me.
I mean, they can look at me. I don't want to, like, feel a fish touch my foot. And that's why I swim in pools, not the ocean.
Oh, no.
But I'm like, let me go to the aquarium. Check these m***ers out. They're behind glass.
But, okay, so I gotta know if this is the general consensus of all of society. Anna, can you tell me about your ocean relationship?
I think it's pretty. If I don't have mountains, I like to go to the ocean. I don't super like swimming in it, as the waves are sometimes, like, really strong. But I don't really think about the sea creature life part. I just think about the water and the beach, and I like sand and like messing around with sandcastles. I get seasick if, I got seasick on an ocean, a crossing from Norway to Denmark. So I tend to think that it's best if I stay on land. Why are you looking at me that way? Aline is from a seafaring people.
I come from a seafaring people. I don't remember not having a sailboat in the possession of my family and spending time on it.
Like an ocean sailboat. Because my dad has a sailboat, but he uses it on the pond.
Right, your dad has a sunfish. But we had a sunfish when I was a tiny girl, and then we had another sailboat. And then, my mom sold the sailboat after my dad died, so I guess I do remember a time when there was not a boat in my family. But my dad was in the Navy, and I don't think that really has a lot to do with it. I'm sure that there are a lot of people who join the Navy and get out of the Navy and don't go to sea. But my parents bought a sailboat and spent 8 years cruising the Pacific, and so I could probably do a whole other episode on movies like Adrift and the one where Robert Redford falls off the boat and those other things and like Dead Calm and all of those, but we're not going to talk about that today. I love the ocean. I like snorkeling. I like to be in the ocean. I like to jump off the boat and swim around when you can't see land on any side of you. And I feel one with the sea creatures in comparison to y'all's preferences not to acknowledge their existence. So,
I'm fine with acknowledging them. I just don't want them to touch me without my consent.
In the aquarium, I'm for it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like land creatures to touch me without my consent.
So you understand.
So I do understand. I seem to be on one
end of the continuum.
Corner of this polygon. And we will be so that's where we're all coming at this conversation about sharks, sharks, sharks.
Did you ever see any sharks when you were out being a seafarer?
Yeah, just little baby ones, though. So we lived in the Caribbean when I was a small girl, and I've been in the waters off Australia and New Zealand as well.
Did you take a boat to school and back every day?
No.
Oh, that's too bad.
Nice. Nice try. So, Anna, tell us about your history with shark movies.
I don't like shark movies very much. I mean, but I'm...
Why are we all here?
Well, so, I mean...
We don't like the ocean. We don't like shark movies. We don't like octopi.
No, that's what I thought.
Hang Octopodes.
On. I really like the Meg.
Okay.
And we watched Sharknado, and I enjoyed that. And we watched The Shallows, and I enjoyed that. So maybe I do like shark movies. Maybe it's like horror movies. I actually like them. I just don't want to see too many dismemberments. I don't know. I don't know where the line is there.
Okay.
As long as no one's throwing up, I'm probably fine.
Okay.
So that's it. Those are the shark movies. Jaws, The Meg, Sharknado, and The Shallows, most of which have been watched in the last month.
You didn't watch Jaws.
I watched it a long time ago, and that was enough for me.
Okay. All right, what about you, Becca? Talk to me about your shark movie love.
I love all shark movies equally. Not quite equally, but more or less. There's like Jaws and then there's like everything else. I got very into Jaws probably when I was in college. I think it was an anniversary and like VH1 got the rights to it and they just played it 7 times a day and I went, okay. And watched it every single time. And then I got very into Jaws and I've watched Jaws multiple times a year ever since. But I also really love every crappy sci-fi original shark movie. I love every movie that is a combination of a shark and another creature, and there are many. Mm-hmm. Renata, let me tell you about Sharktopus.
Yeah.
Becca, I've seen Sharktopus.
Of course you have.
I have. How did you
survive?
I mean, it was tough. I'll let you finish, Becca, and then I can talk about my sharks.
Okay. Okay. Sharktopus, I also just recently learned, has a sequel. The Sharktopus versus Terracuda.
Oh,
which
that's
I guess
good.
A pteranodon mixed with a barracuda. And then a trequel that is Sharktopus versus Whale Wolf.
Oh, Oh, yeah, that makes
and sense. And I need to watch them immediately, basically.
I do not agree with the blending of the land and sea creatures.
Right? That seems...
I don't know how they're going to execute it. It doesn't seem like it will be well done, but I still need to put it in my eyeballs.
Agreed.
Little G drew a sharktopus. I'm going to see if I can find it so we can put it in the show notes.
Yes. There's also one that's Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus starring Debbie Gibson. It's amazing. A mega shark jumps out of the water and eats a plane out of the sky.
This I like.
It's so good. Like, it's just, there's such an absurdness to these movies that they live in no form of reality, and I love them. We've also seen Deep Blue Sea, which is like a real movie, but is still absurd.
Yes.
Where, like, sharks are going to cure Alzheimer's, but then they're mad about it, so they eat everyone.
Obviously.
LL Cool J. LL Cool J is in it, and he has a bird named Bird, and he raps about sharks over the credits. So what more could you ask for?
I remember this movie. I saw it in the theater.
Oh my god, yes. And then there's everyone's favorite Shark Attack 3, starring John Barrowman.
No!
Who I hate.
Solidarity with Kate.
I yes. like him.
I know. Sorry.
This is why Kate and I were like, we're good. We can get along. It's terrible.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, I will love on all the spectrum. I think Jaws is one of the best movies ever made. Let's see if I can remember my my cast I've put together for the all-female remake.
Oh, yes.
Shot
please
for shot.
Hit
that
us.
I want.
Yes, please.
I was like, don't mess with, like, the beauty of the shots in this film, but just fill it with ladies.
Okay.
I gotta remember. Okay, there's Allison Janney is Brody.
Okay.
Yes.
Mindy Kaling was Hooper.
Yes, 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 yes.
I think we just made Melissa McCarthy Quint because she's the one who's always in these, like, female-led, like, movies now.
And she would make a very good Quint.
I like the absurdity of it. Oh, I think we decided that Matt Bomer would be Brody's husband/wife. Because why not?
Why not?
And it was basically going to be the best movie ever made.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know why Hollywood has not come knocking.
I don't know.
I assume you've watched the Jaws sequels.
I have seen one of the sequels. I've seen the one with Michael Caine.
Jaws 3D.
Maybe.
I don't remember which one was.
I don't know. It wasn't good.
Jaws 2 came out just like a year or two later, and then Jaws 3D came out much later.
Yeah, this was in the 70s, so it might have been, I think I want to say it was the third one, maybe. I don't know. I just like the conceit that, like, the shark stalks this family because it wants revenge. I don't know.
Cape Fear, except Robert Mitchum is played by a shark. Perfect. Got it.
Maybe we can think about what movies would be better if actors were replaced by sharks at some later point.
We could think about that.
Yeah, that seems like a solid train to pursue.
Should we move to Renata's shark movies?
Yeah. And then we can talk about more in-depth discussion of Jaws and the Meg later.
I see what you did there. Yes, we will. We'll be talking more about, we'll be talking about shark movies a lot, but I want Renata's background and then I'll do mine a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, so I do contain multitudes and I contain within me both a deep fear and respect for the sea, but also a deep love for campy nonsense, action movies, anything like that. And so, yes, of course, I've seen tons of shitty sci-fi giant animal movies, including Sharktopus, including several of the blended animal ones. But I've also seen every James Bond movie. James Bond will frequently fight a shark. And I always love it. They make really good adversaries. Like, they look cool. You have this sort of sense of added danger of, like, well, also maybe they'll just drown while they're out here. Like, there's an added, I feel like, level of difficulty compared to a, you know, land creature, I feel. Yeah, so I've seen all of those. I have seen, but I like Jaws. It's not really campy enough for me to, like, really love it the way I love, like, Thunderball, for example. But, it's it's a good film. I would definitely watch Becca's all-female reboot.
Hell yeah.
I just aesthetically really like the way cartoon sharks look. They usually just have kind of, like, goofy face. Like, cute. Yeah, they're cute. They're, like, it's like, I am very pointy and I could eat you, but I actually, I just want to, like, smile with all my teeth right now. And I'm into that.
A very small stuffed shark on my desk right now, and it's currently still in its Halloween costume from last year, where it dressed as a mummy. So it's all wrapped up in bandages. He's adorable.
Little G sleeps with two stuffed sharks. One of them is as big as he is, and the other one is the one that
from
was...
From IKEA,
yes. Both of them are from IKEA, yeah, I think.
We still have one.
And so we watched Sharknado with him last weekend, and then he was sitting on the couch, and I brought his sharks down, and when he wasn't looking, I threw them at him as if they were flying through the air.
So he was reading. I mean, the kid was absorbed in his book when we threw these sharks at him, and he's totally fine. He's totally fine.
Everything's fine. He's just a weird mom.
Oh, I have one more thing I want to say about sharks and campiness, a connection that I've just remembered, which is the other campy thing that I really love, of course, is drag queens. And I can think of two really good drag queen shark connections that I want to share and maybe send a GIF to include with the show notes. And one of them was...
We only accept GIFs, no GIFs.
There you go.
I'll send you an animated image. As the drag queen Katya, when the challenge was Death Becomes Her, and they all had to create looks that were somehow about, like, dying, and she made this, like, sexy sailor, and then just had a full plush shark, like, eating her leg.
I like it.
This is brilliant.
It's really good. It's a really good book. I love it. Iconic. And then the other thing is, I haven't seen all of Sharknado 6 yet. But it happened, which came out relatively recent, I think a few months ago maybe, but it was on at the gym the other day, and so I watched, you know, like an hour of it on my treadmill, and the drag queen Alaska is in it as, in this one, the sharks can travel through time. I missed the beginning chunk that maybe would have explained the time
maybe
it wouldn't have, it doesn't really matter. But they end up back in, like, King Arthur times, and Alaska plays this witch who, I forget what her name was. I don't think she was, like, an Arthurian character. I think she's, like, a drag queen witch they added for shark purposes. And it's really good. Like, it's just, like, that's the exact level that I want everything to be operating on, is just, like, a drag queen witch calling, like, shark dragons down, and then, what's his name?
Ian Ziering?
Yes. Pulling the sword out of the stone and, like, stabbing sharks with it. Like, that's all I want.
And you've got it. What a franchise for you.
Here you go.
I got that. I mean, that's one of the things I want. I guess one of the other things that I do want is Jason Statham punching a shark.
Well,
fortunately, you've got that.
Essentially.
So, I go way back to Jaws when it was first out, because I'm just that old. And I saw Jaws at an amphitheater when I was six.
So, you're Greek, you're like
seven.
Ancient Greek old?
So I lived in the tropics, and they had these amphitheaters that were set up where there were these, like, deck chairs and a screen, so it was kind of like a drive-in, but not, because you sat there instead of being in a car. And that was where I first saw Jaws, and it's also where I first saw Saturday Night Fever, but that's another episode. And I was far too young to see this, and I was a little squirrely about hopping in the ocean down the road from our house a little while after that, but then I got over it pretty fast, and I have seen lots of shark movies in my time. I am so glad you reminded me of Deep Blue Sea, because that's the one where somebody is standing on the dock, and they're, like, yes, expounding on shark this
that's
and shark
Samuel
that.
Samuel L. Jackson, my friend.
It's Samuel L. Jackson, right, and a shark jumps up and just, like, eats him whole and swims away mid-sentence.
Yup.
That sounds great.
Very good.
One of the best scenes in all of film. And yes, you know I've seen a lot of them. And Renata mentioned cartoon sharks, and Shark Tale is very enjoyable. if you haven't seen it.
I forgot about it.
I saw this movie at the library today and thought, well, crackers, we don't have time to watch that. And looking, it's on this list. I will be putting lists of the best shark movies in the show notes for your enjoyment. And 47 Meters Down stars Mandy Moore.
Mm.
So
I remember that. I don't think I've seen it, but it sounds so familiar.
And it's like two ladies in scuba diving off Mexico with sharks. And I'm all for the ladies. We saw The Shallows just this weekend. And I mean, okay, Blake Lively, obviously. Blake Lively. And I have some critiques of the shark bite on her creamy flank, because the bite mark is not as torn as it would be, because they could only do like a clean slice on Blake Lively. They couldn't do like chewing it off. But okay.
Maybe Blake Lively's skin is just that, I don't know, I want to say durable. I don't know what quality her skin might have to cause that.
Lots of collagen.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to interrupt on The Shallows for a second.
Okay, I'm not nearly done.
I know. Okay. That's why I was just, I appreciated that it was basically her and the shark, and then all the guys around her kept getting eaten. And I want to know if there are more, like, lady-helmed shark movies, because the other ones we saw were, like, man versus shark.
Well, that's why Mandy Moore this other woman in 47 Meters Down.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. We'll be looking for that. And we loved the Meg, and I just watched Jaws with Little G, and I was really surprised. I have not watched it the way Becca has many times a year for the last 20 years, but I realized that I must have seen it a bunch of times, because every frame of it was familiar.
Yes.
There wasn't anything about it that wasn't, like, part of my soul. And I thought that was pretty interesting. We talked about Jaws and The Shallows, and I wanted to mention Open Water, which is a movie based on something that happened in Australia. You take these dive boats and go out to snorkel the Great Barrier Reef, and, you know, you get on this boat with 20 people, and you go out across the water for an hour, and then everybody jumps in and
maybe
snorkels around a
little
bit.
I don't think any of us would.
Right. Well, just come along with me for this imagined thing. And then you get back on the boat and you go back into town and you are exhausted and sunburned and faintly seasick. And then you eat a lot of dinner and go to bed and sleep really well. And like 20 years ago or so, a couple didn't get back on the boat with everyone and they were left out there. And there was all kinds of news stories about they were faking their deaths to get out of debt and do all this stuff. But they caused a whole lot of changes in the way the dive boats were run. Like, you have a wristband, and you have to turn in the wristband before you can do anything. And before they'll go back in. Sorry, the kitten is eating the kitchen sponge per Instagram this morning. And next to me.
Leave my sponge alone.
And looking adorable, like a shark herself. So Open Water is really, it's really sort of interesting and suspenseful, and I don't really remember sharks eating them. I just remember them being, like, stuck out in the water forever.
That's too bad. I think they should get, since they
if it shows up on this list of shark movies, I think
there are probably sharks in it.
Sharks in it. Yeah. I'm going to trust that Esquire magazine did their fact-checking on that particular element.
Is that the end of your list?
I think I'm done with movies for this particular moment. I'm sure we'll come back.
So my question is, before we discuss the Meg and Jaws in more detail, are we all on Team Shark or Team People Surviving? Because I find myself on Team Shark most of the time.
Well, I think it definitely depends on the people. Like, I feel like every movie has at least one person who they set up where you're like, yeah, it's going to be really satisfying when you get eaten.
Rainn Wilson.
Rainn Wilson, clearly. No one has ever been more set up to be satisfyingly eaten by a shark than Rainn Wilson. But if the shark had eaten Jason Statham, I would be furious.
Yeah, hell no.
Okay. See,
I think it also, like, depends on how the movie's going, because I do definitely remember that at a point in Deep Blue Sea, when there was only, like, three people left, I was just like, all right, I'm on Team Shark. Just go for everyone. Get everyone out of here.
So we're listening to the Meg, the audiobook version of the book, and I would be fine if everyone got eaten.
even though we know that Jonas is really Jason Statham, he's really not very Jason Statham in this book.
Mm, that's fair.
I remember loving Deep Blue Sea.
Based on a book?
Yeah.
No, you didn't. The Meg is based on a series of books, my friend. And so when you go back to find this, if you are interested in the Shark book series of the Meg, do not read or listen to the new Meg, because they blended the first couple of books into one book, and they stripped out all of the glory of the original Meg that was published in the 90s. So,
glory.
Track that down.
Good to know. Will do.
Friend of worst bestsellers, though not our best friend, because our best friend is bellwether friends.
Right.
Friend of worst bestsellers, I don't even own a television podcast, has read the Meg and discussed it. So if people are interested in that book, perhaps they could listen to that podcast episode rather than, you know, read a whole book.
Right. And we will link to that in the show notes, because we've listened to half of the new revised Meg in real life while we've been putting together a puzzle, and holy cats, is it racist and sexist. They describe everyone by their race, and it's weird.
Mm-hmm. I'm just reading, warm water streamed into her slack-jawed mouth, held open in a cruel, jagged smile.
Is that talking about the Meg or one of the women in the book?
Could be either. That's the hard part.
Is it talking about Margaret H. Gallaudet?
Oh,
which, as we've learned, is the Meg's full name.
It's also very preoccupied with the brand name of... Here we go. The landing struts of the two-passenger gimbal G2 Cabri helicopter bounced twice upon the dirt runway before settling down.
What kind of helicopter was that? Where can I buy one?
Yeah, it's a weird one.
It's real weird.
We recommend the movie.
Highly recommend the movie. In a drive-in.
Yes. Ideal.
So, we're going to ask Renata to recap the Meg for us, for those of us who haven't seen it yet.
This is deeply unfair. For those who perhaps have not listened to me on any other podcast before, my memory for the plots of things is very bad. I did not prepare for this by reading a Wikipedia summary, which I would have been if I had advance notice. But you know what? If you want to look at Wikipedia for the Meg, you can do that on your own time. And I will tell you, this is a movie about Jason Statham, who is very handsome and very troubled. And it starts in a flashback where he works for the Navy, question mark? Or
he does in the book.
He's retired Navy in the book.
Yeah, but in the flashback,
in the flashback,
when the incident happens.
Wait, an incident happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's rescuing some people from a submarine, and he's trying to get them out of the submarine, and something happened. Like, he sees a giant Meg-sized shark, and so he does something drastic, like he seals off the submarine or something, and so like a few people die because he knows with his Jason Statham senses that like to save the most people from this shark, he's got to do this thing that sacrifices a few people, basically. But nobody else sees the shark, and they all think that Jason Statham has gotten like deep sea madness and hallucinated this shark, and so he gets like fired or discharged from like whatever. And so he goes off to Thailand to be a drunk fisherman for 5 years. And then we catch up with him in the present day of the movie, where Rainn Wilson, aka Dwight from The Office, is going to visit a deep sea station that's doing some kind of science in the sea.
Science, yeah.
I feel like they of course I wouldn't remember if they said more than that, but B, I don't think they did. I don't think Rainn Wilson knows what they're doing. I don't think anybody knows what they're doing, but they're like studying the science of the sea in this base, and Rainn Wilson is basically like Elon Musk, and so he's like very rich and he's paid for this, and he shows up and he is just like very unlikable from the start. Very overly familiar with the lady scientist and her child, who the child is like 4 years old and should not be living on a deep sea base, if you ask me. But no one asked.
No one asked you.
Parenting tips from Renata.
Yeah. Keep your children on land, please. Anyway, so Rainn Wilson's there and they're like on the deep sea station, but they're sending a submarine down to like depths that no one has reached before. They're going below some kind of
thermocline.
Yes, thank you. They're going below that in their little submarine, and their submarine gets attacked by a giant octopus, which is a real twist. I didn't see coming. I thought it was going to be a shark, obviously. They're attacked by an octopus. I hated it. Then does the Meg come to fight with the octopus?
The Meg chomps the octopus or something. And then that sub is down there and they're like, we have to rescue them, so we need Jason Statham or something.
Yeah, so we need to bring in Jason Statham. They're like, he's the best man for the job. Even though he has been retired and drunk for 5 years, there's still no one better at this than Jason Statham, which honestly checks out because it Jason Statham.
Right?
So they go and get him, and I don't think they really, like, fully explain the situation to him, but he's just like, yeah, all right, I'll go. I'm Jason Statham. They bring him back to the base, and he goes down in another little submarine, and the lady scientist goes down in a second small submarine to go after the big submarine, and
she gets giant squidded or octopus or whatever. Anyway, he has to go after her.
He saves her, but again, someone else, hero from Heroes, in fact, sacrifices himself.
Wait, that's the blonde lady.
What blonde lady? His ex-wife?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, his ex-wife is the other. She's not. Is she also a scientist? What's her job?
I thought she was just a pilot.
She's just a submarine pilot.
Yeah, okay. The lady boat driver is his ex-wife. I did forget about that detail. I honestly thought it was going to come into play a little bit more than it did in the movie.
Not really. I mean,
it didn't really.
She was just there as his ex-wife. So in the book, his wife is sleeping with some other guy, and they're having marital problems, and the Japanese lady is really mad because her brother got eaten by the shark.
In the movie, her brother doesn't get eaten, does he?
I don't know if she has.
No, Hiro doesn't. But, like, so Hiro has a mad sister in the book.
I see. Okay. This was actually sort of moving in the movie, although it didn't really add up. Hiro's trapped in the bigger submarine that they had to go rescue, and he's, like, sadly writing a letter for his wife, because he knows he's going to die. And they're like, no, you're not going to die. It's fine. But then somehow everyone else gets out and he sacrifices himself and sticks the letter in someone's pocket. Which, by the way, they're all underwater. Like, your letter is on paper. But it's fine. It didn't get wet. It survived. And so his wife got that last message from the grave.
Ew.
You know. Anyway, somehow in the process of, like, getting this bigger submarine out, it's some kind of sea science where this current, this warm current has kept the Meg trapped below it. Like, the Meg couldn't go above it.
I think it was super cold layer cold or something. Current.
Well, it's super, super cold at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, but then there is warm water underneath it
that has been trapped
down there by the cold. And because, of course, when you get that deep, you're almost in the Earth's mantle. So, of course, it's warm.
Right.
It's thermal heating.
And that's where the megalodons have been merrily living.
And having baby megalodons.
Right.
Megalodonites. Megalodonies.
Megals.
I don't... Okay.
Megatinis. Yes. So, somehow, in the course of all this undersea exploration, they've disrupted this layer and allowed the Meg to get through that barrier and up to, like, the normal ocean, which is not great.
Not super great.
Oh, in the book. in the book, they kill the Meg's husband, and she rides up through the cold on a wave of her dead spouse's blood.
Yep.
Yes.
Also, she's pregnant.
Also, she's pregnant, yes. And that's how she gets through the breach or whatever it is. Sorry. And that's as far as we listened, so I probably won't interrupt you with more book stuff.
That doesn't happen in the movie, or at least not on screen. But the Meg does get up. The Meg, does some chomping, does that very dramatic moment. If you ever saw the trailer for the Meg, where the little girl, who again should not be living in this underwater base, she's like looking out through the big glass windows, and the shark just comes and like chomps on the window. But doesn't break the window, just sort of leaves some tooth marks. And then Jason Statham's like, it's the Meg. And so he's sort of validated, because for literally 5 years, everyone has been like, you had sea madness and you hallucinated the shark. There's no shark that big, but it's real. And Jason Statham knew it. And now everyone can see this big Meg shark. But that's also bad, because it is there trying to eat them. So it's like a mixed bag of news for Jason Statham.
Also, he showers naked and isn't interrupted by the Japanese lady.
Yes.
Don't most people shower naked? Yes. I'm sorry, hang on.
Sorry, we get to see his naked shower.
You get to see his naked shower. And it's from a weird angle that I don't really entirely approve of.
Gotcha. Carry on.
Anyway, so Rainn Wilson is there, and he, of course, as a typical rich person, just only cares about protecting the name of his company and, you know, what he's invested in this sea base for, again, question mark reasons. Not super clear what he's hoping to get out of this, really, but he wants to make sure that he gets it. So he lies and tells them he's called in like the National Guard or whatever to come and help them, but he didn't really, and he instead just called like his own secret helicopter to take himself away. I might have skipped over, I think the Meg like eats somebody else in the middle there before Rainn goes away in his helicopter. You know how this goes. There's a crew of like 8 of them. They're not all gonna live. Don't worry about it. The little girl is fine and the dog is fine.
Right, and I think even Ruby Rose survives.
Maybe. Yeah, Ruby Rose in this movie. I think she did. Yeah, I think, oh boy. One of the people on the crew is a black man who can't swim. And they kind of joke about it a little bit. Like, he's like, oh, what, do you think I can't swim because I'm black? And he's like, but actually I can't swim. And he's like, I didn't think I would need to. And they're like, what? And he's like, well, my job is just scientist. Like, my job isn't to be, like, the boat driver or whatever. And they're like, yeah, but you're on this underwater deep sea thing. And he's like, whatever, I still can't swim. And it's like, why? Like, anyway, there's that guy. There's Ruby Rose.
There's the old guy scientist whose daughter is a subpilot who dies. But that's, like, heart failure or something. It's not even, like, shark chomping. Relatively few people die due to the shark.
Right. So if you are in an undersea science, sea science base that is completely encapsulated in glass, you are unlikely to get eaten by the Megalodon. And it kind of loses some of the joy of the drunk teenagers swimming in the middle of the night getting chewed up in an obviously filtered shot because the sun is shining while they're getting eaten in the middle of the night. Sorry, we're going to talk about Jaws later.
Yeah. Well, so let's see. Oh, they try some stuff to get the shark. They have like a shark cage, but something goes wrong with the shark cage. And then they want to shoot the Meg with tranquilizers, but they're not sure they have enough. And for like whatever reason, Jason Statham has to get into like a swimming race with the shark to distract it. Don't worry, he's fine, because, again, cannot stress this enough, he is Jason Statham. Throughout the movie, he is Jason Statham.
Yes.
He's very good at it. He's
very good at it. So they try some stuff, and then Rainn Wilson from his helicopter has some, like, I don't know, army bros who, like, shoot and try to explode the shark. And, in fact, they do explode a shark. And Rainn Wilson thinks that that is mission accomplished. Everything's fine. But guess
Rainn
what?
Rainn Wilson has never seen Jaws.
Rainn Wilson's never seen Jaws. Right. He's a fool. And they have, in fact, exploded the Meg's child, the mini Meg. And so real full-grown Meg now is pissed, comes out to play at, like, the most crowded beach I've ever seen in my entire life. Where's it's in China? I don't know. A very crowded beach with lots of people in inflatable rafts. The shark is, and a guy in like an inflatable hamster ball is like running on the water, which I enjoyed. I would never do that, but I enjoyed watching it. And then the shark like chases him and breaks the bubble, but that guy's fine. Actually, again, the shark doesn't really hurt that many people. The shark interrupts a wedding shoot that's happening at the beach. And this is, again, where that small dog in the trailer came from, because that dog is part of their wedding party. And it seems like maybe the Meg's going to eat the dog. Don't worry, the dog is fine.
This is the most important thing. It really is.
It is.
Also, I feel like it's in Singapore, but maybe that's wrong.
Maybe that's Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh, it's a crossover.
It's definitely a crossover scene. It's like a secondary wedding. It's not the wedding that is set in Crazy Rich Asians, but it's one of their cousins' weddings.
Yeah, it's in their social circle. I buy that 100%. And then, I don't remember how they actually defeat the Meg. Like, I don't remember how this ends.
Jason Statham is in the water with it, and they have... They have something to blow it up with or whatever, right?
Well, no, they blew up the baby Meg.
They blew up the I don't think that they get that they defeat the Meg, because I think that we were talking sequel after.
No, I thought that they did. Obviously, we need to see it again.
Because during the movie, I thought that they weren't going to kill the Meg. I was predicting that they would just figure out a way to chase it back down below that layer. But I think they did kill the Meg, but I don't remember how. Which goes to say something, probably, about this movie.
We kind of meant to see it again, and then we just haven't yet, because MoviePass has been really messed up.
MoviePass is being a real dick about everything. I'm going to look up the Meg on IMDb real quick, which, up till this point, I have not, obviously.
You've been doing a great job, so you remember more than you think.
Oh, I also forgot to say Jason Statham's character is, in fact, named Jonas.
Jonas Taylor or something. He calls himself JT in the book.
I knew it. Joseph, and I was like, oh, JT.
Every time he calls himself He's JT, cool I'm like, Justin Timberlake! No. And then I'm disappointed.
This synopsis in IMDb is real long.
Oh, IMDb.
Scroll
to the end.
Okay, the crew finds out the shark is heading for a nearby popular beach in China and plans to lure the shark away from the beach, right, with whale noise recordings, and then torpedo it to hell with the mini subs. The shark initially attacks a nearby Chinese wedding party on another boat and seemingly eats the bride's dog Pippin before briefly terrorizing the locals at the beach. It stops attacking when it hears the whale noises and takes the bait. This leads into a massive chase between Jonas and the shark, as he leaves it to Su Yin, who hits it with a torpedo, but it does nothing. Even worse is that Jonas's torpedo won't fire. During the fight... Listen, his dick is fine, don't worry about it. During the fight, a group of news helicopters trying to film the action stupidly crash into each other. There's a lot of judgment in this summary, by the way. Stupidly crash into each other, and the wreckage crashes onto the team's boat, forcing everyone into the water. Okay, I do remember that.
Yep.
Su Yin goes to help the others, while Jonas, in an attempt to protect everyone, goes head-on with the shark, slicing its underbelly open badly with the sub. He then gets out of the sub once the shark tries mauling it and stabs it through the eye, mortally wounding it. A dozen regular sharks move in to finish it off and eat it alive, ending the threat. I kind of don't remember this. Were we just talking about other things too much at that point?
Possible? No, I remember him stabbing it in the eye, and maybe that's why I don't think that it really died, because all of those other sharks are eating the spirit of the megalodon, and they're going to become big because they've eaten pieces of the megalodon, because that's how it works, right? And
maybe, now that you mentioned stabbing it in the eye, maybe I just looked away. Maybe that was the point where it got, like, too gross for me to look at anymore. Anyway, the final paragraph of the synopsis is, with the danger past, everyone regroups aboard the wedding couple's boat, including Pippin the dog, who turned out to have survived. See, I told you. Jonas and Su Yin are presumably now a couple, their romance being hinted at throughout earlier in the movie. The movie ends with everyone celebrating their victory and the oceans are now safe. That's a really bold statement. No, they're not.
They're so not safe. They're oceans.
They're totally safe.
Just one paragraph earlier, you mentioned a dozen regular sharks movie synopsis. They're still there, and now they're full of Meg meat.
They are.
We can only hope there will be a sequel.
Oh, there has to be a sequel. So, yeah, that's pretty much the Meg, and we did not give Renata warning that we were going to ask her to recap. Although we do have a history of loving Renata recaps, TM. Are we moving on to Jaws?
Yeah, someone explain Jaws to me since I didn't rewatch it with you.
Right, you didn't watch it. So, Becca, would you like to give us a synopsis of Jaws?
Oh, gosh. The scene opens in a bedroom. No, it opens on the beach. These drunk kids are going in the water and a girl gets eaten by a shark.
Yay!
And you're like, oh, I know what this movie's about. And then you got Chief Brody, who is from Brooklyn, but now lives on fake Martha's Vineyard and is dealing with all these small town crimes. But then he finds out a girl got eaten by a shark. But the coroner calls it a boating accident, of course, because no one gets eaten by shark on Beach Island.
Especially not right before 4th of July weekend.
Yeah. Then the whole economy crashes. And basically, the entire town's economy is based on tourism. It's just before the 4th of July. They're like, you can't shut down the beaches. No one can make any money. But all these shark attacks keep happening. A little kid gets eaten. That poor Kitner boy. And so Chief Brody calls someone from the Shark Institute into young Richard Dreyfuss, who's a shark nerd, which is the best person you could actually ever have in a shark movie is a shark nerd. And
Or a Jason Statham. I feel like if you are assembling a fantasy team, like, either of those would be a solid top draft pick.
I don't know. Maybe I'll have to see the Meg eventually, and then maybe it'll change my mind. I'm not fully on board with the shark nose punching.
Okay. Animal rights activist Becca.
So far from the truth. And so Brody and Hooper get together with Quint, who is this just bedraggled
salty sea dog.
Yes, exactly. Who says he'll kill the shark. And they all go out together, and it is ridiculous because they're all very different people. It's really about the people in Jaws, guys. It's not about the sharks. But it's also about the sharks. And then they're just on the ocean for goddamn ever. And the shark is taunting them, and it's amazing. And eventually the shark bites the boat to bits and eats Quint. Boat.
Yeah, what size is the boat?
Medium size. And to be fair, it's not big enough.
Is that why they're going to need a bigger boat?
Potentially. Honestly, I just feel they need a more put together boat.
But it is a bit of a creaky rust bucket.
It's exactly the boat you would expect a sea dog like Quint to have, the orca. So Quint gets eaten in half. It's really good. Hooper goes into a shark tank at one point because he's going to try and tranquilize the shark, but the shark eats the shark tank. So you think Hooper's gone. So Brody gets, the shark is munching along as the ship is sinking, and the shark gets one of the compressed air tanks in its mouth, and Brody, our hero, shoots it, and the shark turns into shark salsa. And it's a very happy ending. And then all of a sudden, Hooper shows up because he's like, I was just chilling below the ocean the whole time. And these two bros paddle back to land and everything is safe again. Until the sequel, when that shark's family hunts down Brody's family and tries to kill them.
Yeah, as you do.
Yeah.
As you do.
I did a very condensed summary, but yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's really good. It was interesting. So watching it with Little G was a lot of fun because he is sort of interested in filmmaking. And so he was very intrigued by the shark effects. And we talked in advance about it being scary, but that it is not very likely that he will be eaten by a shark when he is swimming on Cape Cod, where he likes to spend time.
Except accidentally how last weekend a person was
killed exactly.
by a shark on Cape Cod, but that's fine. Don't tell him that.
Right. Well, see, that was the whole thing. I was telling him this, and there had been a shark attack off the Cape that week, too. There were a couple this summer. It's not a good time. But we talked about that. And then, of course, I had to, like, pause the movie and talk to him about public safety versus the economy of the town and the mayor's motivations.
I'm telling you, there's a lot of lessons in chat.
And then I had to say, you know, little G, a compressed air tank is not going to explode like that unless it is full of some sort of fuel gas and there is a spark involved. But it's part of the movie effect. And we went round and round about a lot of things because...
I mean, potentially if you shot the tank, that could create a spark.
It could, but it's just oxygen in there. Sure, it's not going to explode. It's just going to go poof. So, this is part of the problem.
Maybe it is.
When you watch movies about the ocean with seafaring people, sometimes you get pedantry.
That's why we weren't going to watch Adrift anyway, but we're really not going to watch it.
We're really not. No, I would be completely intolerable watching Adrift. So, Jaws is great. If y'all haven't seen Jaws...
Does it hold up, would you say? Or is it like you watch it as a remnant of its time?
Becca, what do you think?
I think it does, and part of what works so much of that, like, there's so much, like, even, like, you say Little G's interested in filmmaking, like, it's a great movie to watch if you're interested in filmmaking, especially if you're working with things like suspense, because they don't show you the shark until, like, halfway through the movie. So the fear that you're feeling is just the anticipation and your imagination of what's going to happen, and that's scarier than anything that they could actually show you. And that also means you're not looking the whole time at this robotic, broken-down Bruce shark that they actually had to deal with.
Right.
And going, well, that doesn't look that scary, because you're not seeing it. What you're seeing is three yellow barrels that keep going underwater and then resubmerging, and you're like, ah, that's the shark!
Right, right. I thought it held up.
Yeah.
From a filmmaking standpoint and from a suspense standpoint, and I had never done the New England beachy thing until 3 or 4 years ago when I started visiting Anna and then moved here. And so there is this sort of like island fake vineyard culture, but also like beachy, coasty, capey action that is, it's still that way. The fashion is different. Yes. The haircuts are different, but it's still very present in our lives here in New England.
We keep getting older and the sharks stay the same age.
Yes, yes, exactly. Like that. What is that guy's name?
Matthew McConaughey.
No, but what's his character's name?
I don't care.
I know. But yes, exactly. His name is like Hoser or something, but not.
Oh, God, I can't remember.
It's good. I'm going to have to look it up and put it in the show notes. I bet there's a good gif of that.
Yes, absolutely.
Do we want to talk more about shark movies, or do we want to move on to shark books and shark songs?
Well, what do we have for shark books and shark songs? Hit us with it.
I'm going to look up the list.
Have you read the Jaws book? There's a Jaws book, right?
There is a Jaws book.
Yeah, Peter Benchley.
I've never read it.
He was a bestseller on the order of Stephen King around that time. And the book was made into a movie within just a year or so. It was sort of one of those early adaptations, blockbuster novel made into blockbuster movie.
Yeah.
History.
And then Michael Crichton knocked him off. And then
Michael Crichton took over. I have all of these lists right here. So Book Riot put together a list of books to take you into Shark Week.
Oh yeah, we have to talk about Shark Week. I still don't fully understand what it is.
You're going to need a bigger boat. 11 great books for Shark Week, which I will put in the show notes. It is a list by Liberty.
Yay!
Yay! And it includes Shark by Jeffrey Rotman.
What's that?
It's got a really scary cover. It's big photographs. It's a coffee table book. Ooh, we're going to have to see if the library has that. And there were a bunch of shark attacks in 1916 that were real.
There's the Meg.
There's the Meg.
Yeah,
there's
give me the
Jaws.
Highlights.
There's a DK book. There's a book. I remember this one. Demonfish travels through the hidden world of sharks. And In Harm's Way, the sinking of the USS Indianapolis and the extraordinary story of its survivors. It is the speech that Quint gives in Jaws about being on the boat that sank. This is the story of that ship.
Mm.
There's a book called Motherfucking Sharks.
Great.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Are they on a motherfucking plane?
Possibly.
I'd watch that movie.
Right? And there are a few more that are more in the $5.99s sort of neighborhood. But there's another, The Devil's Teeth, a true story of obsession and survival among America's great white sharks. The best thing is that these are written by women, some of them.
Yay!
So I'll link to that Book Riot list so that you can all look those up, and we will definitely be tracking down mother sharks.
I just looked up mother sharks, and there's, like, the quote that comes up that, like, is then linked to Google Books, and what comes up is, mother sharks reads like it was carved into the floor of a sun-baked desert by an Old Testament prophet with a thirsty knife.
Perfect!
So that's, let me put that on my, like, all my literature.
Okay, then.
Sounds good. So, do y'all have any shark books besides this? When I looked up books about sharks, I found this fabulous Book Riot list, and then I found a whole lot of kid-focused lists, which were not what I was looking for. So, that might be all there is.
I mean, there is a choose-your-own-adventure book called I Am a Shark.
Ooh!
That's true.
I think for me, I think probably shark books are going to fall in line with things like action books, where it's just like, I just want to watch the movie. I'm not that interested, like, to read a fight scene or to read a description of, like, a shark swimming. Like, it's just not as compelling to me as that visual image.
Well, right. Especially when you can see the jaw hinges.
The teeth, man, the teeth.
You see their beady little eyes. Black eyes, like a doll's eye.
Let's see. For worst bestsellers we read, I always get the titles of them confused. We read a James Bond book that included a shark fight. I think it was You Only Live Twice. Let me just check that real quick.
Neither confirm nor deny. I can tell you that it's really funny that you were like, I'd rather watch sharks than read about them, but yeah, I all read, like, for 20 minutes from that book about that shark fight.
I'm sorry.
Let me tell you. I had to cut that thing down.
I'm sorry.
Here, I'm gonna
it was, first of all, it was Live and Let Die. Second of all, this was 3 years ago, Becca. I'm sorry.
That's how much it scarred me, Renata.
I appreciate a long-held grudge. Good job, Becca.
It was episode 24 of Worst Bestseller.
That was a while
back.
That
was the point where I was just like, what have I gotten myself into?
What have I done?
So, do you have a dramatic reading, Anna?
I do. It's the difficulty of writing shark movement.
Oh, good. So, I'm looking forward to this, and then I'll talk a little bit about shark songs.
The female moved effortlessly through the thermocline, its torpedo-shaped body gliding with slow, snake-like movements perpetrated by the shark's powerful swimming muscles, which attached internally to her cartilaginous vertebral column and externally to her thick skin. As her flank muscles contracted, the megalodon's crescent moon-shaped tail pulled in a rhythmic, undulating motion, propelling the monster forward. The immense caudal fin gave the fish maximum thrust with minimal drag, while maintaining a streamlined flow through the sea.
But wait, it didn't talk about the nature of her skin that also reduces friction.
I know.
Oh, for crying out loud. Okay, so yeah, definitely watch shark movies because then you don't have to sit through that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does not get better on an audiobook with a professional performer. We've listened to 5 hours of it.
So far.
That's plenty.
I think that's enough.
Yeah, I think it's enough. There are lists of shark songs.
Do we know any of them?
We know the Ballad
There's
of Sharknado.
Baby Shark, absolutely.
Baby Shark?
Little Baby Shark. One.
I don't know this one. 7 songs to get your Shark Week party started. There's a Macklemore song that references Shark Week.
Get out.
There is a song called Season of the Shark by Yola Tango. The Macklemore song is Can't Hold Us. There is a song by Group Love called Shark Attack, but it's just a metaphor.
Ugh, I hate a metaphor.
I hope the song is called Shark Attack, parentheses, but it's just a metaphor.
No, I think that's just in the description.
And it's... I maintain that the Sharks should have had a song in West Side Story.
Yeah.
Not just the Jets.
Oh, this is that's good. Okay. This is true. Yeah. V.V. Brown sings Shark in the Water. Don Kong does a shark, does a Jaws theme, so I don't know if that's, like, sampling John Williams.
I think we can just leave it at the Jaws theme, and we'll be fine.
Leave it at the Jaws theme. And there, Henry Mendez has a song called El Tiburon, which is the shark.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Buffett has a song called Fins.
Oh, well, okay.
So, that's what you're in for if you want to get your Shark Week party started.
So, Shark Week is...
Oh, right. What is Shark Week? Can either of y'all enlighten us?
I know we could Google it. I guess we should.
Is it TLC, the Learning Channel? Or is it...
Discovery?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's Discovery.
I don't have cable, so I never have actually had the opportunity to partake in Shark Week. But, like, in my heart, every week is Shark Week, so...
Right.
I feel okay with it.
As Tracy Jordan said, you gotta live every week like it's Shark Week.
Yeah.
I think it's just a week of, like, shark-themed programming on Discovery Channel.
Okay.
And I think as the years went on, it became more of a thing, and they would, like, film things specially for it. Like, have Michael Phelps race a shark, which he didn't really do because he's a shark.
I got a DVD that was, like, Best of Shark Week, and it has, like, a Mythbusters episode and, like, the true story of Jaws on it. We just haven't had a chance to watch it. So I've always seen references to Shark Week and been like, well, what is this?
Yeah, it's just also, like that.
Also, why?
Well, it's nice. Because it's hard to say.
Sharks.
And people love sharks.
I think it started because Discovery Channel is just like, oh, we're an educational cable channel. We need something for people to pay attention to us. Sure, Shark Week.
Sharks are and sexy. Then,
yeah.
Okay.
And then it just became a thing because people like sharks.
But also, I feel like as years have gone by, it's become less and less scientific and related to sharks. They're like really scraping the bottom of the barrel. They're like, here's our special on ghost shark, creature of the deep. And it's like, it's not real. What are you talking about?
That's not a thing.
So before we sign off, We can have closing thoughts. I would like to envision our ideal shark movie if we haven't seen it yet. Like, my ideal shark movie would have a salty sea dog, but it would really be Aileen. So it would be like a salty sea lady captain who maybe was back in the sea after being on land for a while. And
my son is the rock.
Right. Her son is the rock. Mm. And like the shark from her past, which has a visible scar, so you can tell it's the same shark.
Right, I took a bite out of its dorsal fin.
Something like that.
Ooh.
And so, carry on, what happens then?
Well, the shark ate my son's arm.
Oh.
But he survived, and this is just because he had lost a leg in Skyscraper, so we're going to go with an arm for my shark movie, because The Rock is a versatile actor. And I'm mad.
Yeah.
But I was busy working for many years, and I've retired, and I'm going back to the sea.
Yeah.
Because I spent some time in the corporate world to buy myself a really shiny boat.
Oh, big one.
That's big. It's big, shiny boat. So it doesn't need to be bigger.
So can you ride the shark at some point in this movie?
Yeah. Okay. That the bite that I took out of the dorsal fin provides an excellent handhold.
Okay.
And when you get on the shark's back, it can't eat you.
What can take you underwater, though? So maybe you should be wearing, like,
some... I have gills.
Oh, right.
I was going to say, if anything, it sounds like Aileen is really, like, a person of the sea. She really...
She could deal with this. She would have gills. Okay.
She's secretly part shark the whole time.
Right?
Great. So then we just align ourselves with the shark, and that's fine.
And, yeah, we're going
to... It doesn't have to die gruesomely.
Right. There will be no gruesome death. We will come to terms, the shark and the rock and I, and we are not going to live happily ever after. There will be a sunset scene with the shark swimming off into the sunset, and we, the rock and I, will drink some single malt scotch. There will be no romance in the movie at all.
Okay.
My wife will be... off screen.
Wondering where the hell you are.
a landlubber.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any ideal shark movie plots you would like to propose?
Yeah, mine would be Fast and Furious 9. And it would be in the nature of all the Fast and Furious movies, like, everyone takes the villain of the last movie and is like, actually, that villain wasn't that bad. And the the real villain was this. And so it's revealed that the person behind Charlize Theron in 8 was actually Sharklees, who's a shark. And somehow the Sharklees. Thank you.
Yeah,
somehow Sharklees is behind all of those. And so the Fast and Furious crew, who are, you know, they're great at cars, but now they've got to become great at boats. And it will be very easy for them, of course.
Of course.
They will get some extremely fast boats, some extremely furious boats. They did already have a thing with a submarine, but, you know, I don't know. Now they get speedboats and, like, jet skis, probably.
Can they have shark faces with teeth painted on the bows?
Yes, absolutely. I will allow this.
Thank you.
I was going to say, also, they are always jumping over the shark. They're just constantly jumping over the sharks. And yet, every time it's delightful. You never feel as if the franchise itself has jumped the shark. They just are literally jumping sharks. And then, of course, at the end, it is revealed that the true villain was a squid.
All along.
All along.
Okay.
A giant squid or just a little
just
one?
Just a tiny squid with a complex.
A tiny squid with a monocle. He's like, yes, my plan.
Maybe both. Maybe at the end of this movie you see small squid, and then 10 you find out about giant squid.
Okay.
It's there all along, but we didn't know. Also, by the way, in this one, they use sea science, as alluded to in Deep Blue Sea, you know, their cells don't die or whatever. They use that technology to bring Han and Giselle back to life, and so
yes!
They're there. Oh,
yes! Okay.
So you end with the little squid, but then you just see, like, a giant tentacle of the Squidilodon?
Yeah, that's the, like, mid-credit scene.
Perfect.
And then Fast Furious 10 is all about that.
Okay. Do you have one, Becca?
I mean, I think we already discussed it, which is my shark for shark remake of Jaws.
Yes.
With ladies.
Yes, and that can't be talked.
I think we should
make
all of these movies.
I think we should.
Maybe Lil G will become a filmmaker.
Hollywood, you can reach us on Twitter. So, Rebecca, do you have a musical obsession?
Wait! I have one important shark question to ask.
Yes, so. I would like to have closing thoughts before we do our obsession. Go ahead, Becca.
Okay. A poll. Sharks. Rough or smooth?
Now, you have touched a shark. I read this on the internet.
This is true.
There are sharks in the Boston Aquarium, right? That are swimming by. I think they're like rough and smooth.
It's a directional thing, yes. Their skin is very smooth one direction, and it is rough the other direction.
Wrong. Sharks are smooth as hell.
Correct. They're smooth as hell.
I feel like we walked into something, but I don't know what it was.
I think it was a trap.
A shark trap.
As hell.
Okay.
Sorry, I guess this is all going to have to be believed, but we'll give you a link to our evidence that sharks are smooth as
hell.
It's okay.
It's very good. It's a very good joke. I don't actually remember. I think it was kind of rough when I did.
I think Brandon Reese is the cartoonist.
I think so.
Yes, send us the link, please.
I look forward to that.
I'm amazed that you're, like, even on Twitter and have never encountered this.
I missed it. I don't know. I'm even on Tumblr and I haven't seen it, so who knows?
I am really patchily interneted.
Fair.
Okay, so musical obsessions. Becca, go ahead.
Oh, gosh. I listen to a lot of podcasts is the problem, so I don't listen to a lot of music lately. My fallback when I need to listen to something while I'm working and can't focus on a podcast is to listen to Heather's The Musical.
Perfect.
Really?
Quite literally a musical obsession.
That's what we like. We like people's long-time obsessions or their current obsessions. So is there a particular Heather's The Musical song that you go to or that you would recommend for those of us who've not heard Heather's The Musical?
Oh, gosh. I mean, really the whole thing. It is very close to the movie in a lot of ways, but also improves upon it in a lot of ways. The opening number is very good, and I'm completely blanking on what it's called. Called Beautiful, and it's like 10 minutes long, but it gives you a really good, like, here is everything that's happening, and here is the setup, and here is what you could expect from this show.
Perfect. I like that a lot. How about you, Anna?
So I had a patron come to the library, and he wanted help with YouTube. And I was like, well, what song do you want to play? And he said, Careless Whisper by Wham. And I was like, oh, I approve of your choices.
What a champion.
And I was so, Careless Whisper has been stuck in my head since that time, and I have no problem. There was a brief period today when Last Christmas was stuck in my head, but I am bumping that in favor of Careless Whisper.
You also moved from Careless Whisper to Everything She Wants and then back to Careless Whisper. Yeah.
I'm he never says he really dance likes again. George Michael, and I said, I really like George Michael, and then he shook my hand.
Nice.
I appreciate a patron-inspired musical obsession. Renata, do you have one?
I sure do. Her name is Ariana Grande.
Just
in general. Known. Yeah, a little known. Independent, young, rising star, Ariana Grande.
I think she was on the Trolls soundtrack.
Oh, girl, you know she was. You know she Her most recent album is called Sweetener, and I specifically am picking the song Borderline. And most specifically, this song features Missy Elliott.
Yoo!
And Missy's verse features this line, "Wish you'd chew on me like fresh grapes," which just makes me... I have questions about that.
All the questions.
Every time I listen to it, she just says it so clearly, and I'm like, I don't know if that's how I'd like to be treated, but, you know, give Missy what she wants, I guess. Anyway, so that's Borderline by Ariana Grande featuring Missy Elliott, who wants to be chewed upon like fresh grapes.
Carefully peel them with your mouth.
No.
Put them in a bowl, yes. And they're like eyeballs.
No!
Yes. I was like, flay, and then...
Oh my gosh. Okay. I look forward to hearing this, because I have not heard it yet.
I have a different borderline in my head. So.
Right? And I'm going to have that one stuck in my head.
The Madonna one, which but is also great.
So, in keeping with the theme of our episode... I am going with The Ballad of Sharknado by Anthony Ferrante. And if you don't know it, it is played over the closing credits of the first Sharknado movie and then becomes a thing for the rest of it. And this article from Entertainment Weekly is about him writing this song because they couldn't get the rights to any music because of budgetary constraints.
Wow, that's a surprise.
And it says, here's a quote, "The Ramones-inspired theme song is undeniably catchy." And it is.
I don't remember it at all, but okay.
It's catchy. So that's my musical obsession. Renata, do you have Wait, oh, sorry.
Let me see if I can get this to work. Okay. This is my secondary musical obsession. No.
Okay, I love Under the Sea, as you know.
That song slaps, so.
Life is the bubbles.
You know what? I've never, like, fully put this together, but when I was a kid, I loved The Little Mermaid. It was my favorite Disney movie, and I wonder if I just, like, imprinted too hard on Ariel, and that's what has caused me to reject the sea.
Oh.
It's possible.
Like, you know what? She's right. I do want to be on the land. I don't want to be down there where, like, Ursula and the scary eels are.
I want to be with Ursula and the scary eels.
I want to be where the
people
are.
Story checks out.
Do you want to see? Want to see him dancing?
I do.
So, apart from The Little Mermaid, do you have a regular obsession?
I would also want to see a fish dancing if that was on offer.
Good point. Apart from Little Mermaid, do you have a regular obsession?
You know what I mean?
Renata.
My regular obsession has for years been Captain Marvel, but today, the day that we're recording this, the trailer for the Captain Marvel movie has just dropped, and it's really renewed and exacerbated my obsession with Captain Marvel in general, and I'm very excited to see this movie.
Yay!
Excellent. Do you have an obsession, Becca?
My current obsession is the show BuzzFeed Unsolved, which is two dudes who work at BuzzFeed investigating either supernatural things or true crime. And the supernatural episodes are very, very good because one of them is 100% skeptic and one of them is 100% believer and scared of everything. And
like
it's very
X-Files.
Entertaining.
It sounds like the X-Files,
except it's BuzzFeed, which I love. Podcast or a TV show?
It's a TV show. Sorry. Okay. It's on Hulu. It's on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah. Excellent. It's very good. It's delightful.
Anna, do you have a regular obsession?
I do. It's a book.
Oh, really?
It is a historical paranormal gay romance.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. Tell me more.
I'm
literally opening the notes feature on my phone right now.
Okay, it's by KJ Charles. I don't know if you've read her stuff.
Yep, I have. I have.
And it's called Spectred Isle. Instead of Sceptred Isle. See, get it? This Spectred Isle.
Spectred. Got it.
Anyway, so it's set just after World War I. So
love it.
The magical defenders of Britain, who are like the green men, quotation mark, and use like the power of nature to keep things as they're supposed to be, their ranks have been severely depleted by the stuff that went down in World War I, and there are some shenanigans. So there's one guy who's like in charge of defending magical Britain, and then there's this other guy who just keeps popping up everywhere he is, and he's like, what are you doing? And eventually they fall in love, and it's the first in a series, and the next is about the main guy's sister and the lady that she gets involved with. So I'm glad.
She's branched out to ladies?
Maybe. This is what her website says.
Ooh, I'm excited.
I'm excited, too, because I really like her. So I had purchased a copy of Spectred Isle, but then I was on Hoopla, and I saw the audiobook, and I was like, great. So I have purchased it, and I have listened to the library's copy, and I enjoyed it very much. It's like a quick read, as most KJ Charles ones are, but I liked it. It's good. How about you, Aline?
Mine is also a book.
What?
Yeah, I just started listening to it today on...
You're already obsessed.
And I'm already obsessed with it. It is Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Maria Machado. It is her debut short story collection. It was published last year and won a variety of prizes, including the Shirley Jackson Award and the Lambda Literary Award for Lesbian Fiction. And I listened to the first story, which was an hour long or so, and I read a description of all the stories and was like, this is great! And Anna was like, I think it's horror-ish. And I was like, that's interesting. And so it's listed as speculative. And the first story is that old ghost story about the young woman who has the ribbon around her neck and her husband wants her to take it off.
Oh, no.
And wants her to take it off and wants her to take it off. And we all know this ghost story, as you both chimed in. And she allows her husband to untie the ribbon and her head rolls off. And we all heard this story either thanks to Alvin Schwartz or thanks to some other venue if we were too old for Alvin Schwartz. Is that the guy?
Yes.
And this is a very grown-up version of it. She has lots of sex with her husband, and there are all kinds of things that are going on in it, and she touches on all of the ghost stories that you heard as a child, and a variety of urban legends, and the escaped mental asylum dude with the hook when the kids are making out in the car happens off screen in this story, and it's so compelling. And she has this mechanism that she says as she's writing along, and it says, if you were reading this story out loud, then this is what you need to do to make the sound that I am describing. If you're reading this story out loud, this is what you need to do to your body so that you can feel what it is that I'm describing. And it's really interesting and really good, and I'm gonna keep reading it, even though I have to lead a book discussion on it in 2 days. In spite of
usually
the fact.
Usually that doesn't happen.
But it's good, and it's new, and it's inclusive, and I am promoting it here. You heard it.
You heard it here first, maybe.
Yeah. We made it! Through all of our plots and plans.
I like The Shallows, I think.
I loved The Shallows.
Did you have you seen it, Becca?
No.
You should see it. I mean,
I definitely remember hearing about it.
I mean, it's only a few years old.
It's only an hour and a half long. It's only a few years old. Blake Lively.
Unfortunately, her mom dies of cancer, so that was not my favorite, as detailed several episodes ago.
Yes.
But she does so off screen.
She does it off screen. You just, like, see her, you know, in a hospital chair or something, and you're like, oh, she's lost her hair somewhere. Mm. I wonder what that could mean. But, like, the shark action is good, and, like, Blake Lively is, you know, she sews her leg shut, like, with her necklace, because the shark has bitten it, and she's stuck out on this little coral projection, so she can see the shore, but she can't get there, because the shark just keeps, like, circling around, and so she's, like, timing it. There's pieces of her surfboard are floating around, and she has a seagull friend named
Steven Seagull.
Oh my god.
She names him Steven. So that's my that's a sub obsession. I recommend The Shallows if you like a shark movie and you haven't seen it, because it's pretty recent.
And it's good. It's good in spite of my issues with the shark bite wound not looking not like a shark bite wound.
Bitey enough.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Bellwether Friends. You can find us on Facebook. We're on Tumblr. You can look us up on iTunes and leave us a review. Only positive reviews, please. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at Surly Spice. And you can find Renata and frequently Becca at Worst Best Sellers, the podcast.
No, Worst Best Seller with no... Oh, I thought you were giving our Twitter name.
Worst Best Sellers, the podcast, or at Worst Best Seller without the S on Twitter.
Because the shark ate the S.
The shark ate the S, but we should mention that we recently appeared on Worst Best Sellers.
Right, right. We discussed Hope Never Dies, the Obama-Biden not very fun mystery.
Wouldn't it have been more fun if Joe Biden punched a shark?
Absolutely. Right.
That is definitely a book where if, let's say, heroin was replaced with sharks, it would have been way better.
Way better.
Right, right. So, yeah, we were on Worst Bestseller. So I'm not talking anymore. So, Renata, where can we find you on the internet?
In addition to the Worst Bestsellers Twitter, which is at Worst Bestseller with no S, as previously mentioned, I personally am on Twitter at Renata Snacks with two S's. Actually, that's where the S's went. I took them for my name.
The whole time.
Yeah. So that's RenataSnacks. And I also post a lot about my cat there.
Yay!
What about you, Becca?
You can find me on Twitter and probably anywhere else I wish to be found on the internet at Ginthusiastic. Gin like the beverage, and like you're enthusiastic about it.
Thank you for joining us.
Me too.
You are enthusiastic about gin?
Yes.
Yes. Thanks
we'll
very
have to get
much
together and drink gin and watch Jaws.
Being with us.
Yeah, that would be good.
That sounds like a very good plan.
Yes. That's basically how I want to be living every second of my life.
This is good.
Living your best life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that it?
I think so.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for having us.
Let's go. Welcome to Bellwether Friends. Definitely not the first podcast where we talk about pop culture.
You want to start that again? She was looking for the document.
I always think I can do it from memory, but it turns out
no, it's only 94 episodes down the line. Okay.
Maybe you should do it.
No.